Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind, body medicine, and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Oh, hello, everybody. I'd like to talk to Dr. Bernie Siegel. It's kind of interesting. It's like I've become two people, because I'm thinking of myself, and I don't mean that in a selfish way. It's because I've become two people, so one thinks of the other, and I'm 92, and it's, what do you do with your life, you know? I'm still active, still doing things, still have a schedule, and then there are times where what I love to do is take it easy, you know, not have a schedule, not have to have, you know, have a commitment. One of the things that interests me is sharing with you. My wife has died. When I say we, but we had five children. And just to point out how these things affect us. When I found, and I've talked about this, my wife dead one morning, she died in her sleep, it felt like I had a knife stuck in my heart. And that's a few years ago, and since then I've had heart problems. I ended up in the hospital. I've had pacemakers put in, so I've had plenty of problems, and I am more limited in terms of my ability to get around, can't drive anymore. I can sit in front of a computer and I can talk to you, and that's good. I feel good doing that. But then one of our sons, the senior one, who I'd say was a thinker, went to law school, mayor of his town, also a drummer, which I loved. He's having a problem with himself and his life and his father, you know, that he worries about his father, and he gets mad at me. And I'm trying to help him, and I'm not getting mad at him, but it's discouraging that he isn't doing what I'm trying to teach people to do. You know, enjoy yourself. Stop worrying about everything. And last night I spent a lot of time talking to myself and thinking about that. You know, do I want to get up tomorrow? I'm not going to commit suicide. I respect myself. But it's not hard to die if you want to die. Just do all the wrong things and you'll die. Because your body gets the message about how you feel about life. So, you know, my wife died. I ended up in the hospital because of how I was feeling. And these are the things, whether it's your immune system, your cardiovascular system, anything, you get depressed. You don't like getting up in the morning. Your body will do you a favor. It'll get you sick. And then you don't have to go to work, and you don't have to get out of bed and all that nonsense. But when you're loving life, what a difference. What a difference. So I do therapy with myself at night, and I think I'm getting a little better. But one of the things, say, why one of, like, the oldest gets mad at me, is I'm trying to help him. And I think he feels belittled by my telling him he needs to change his attitude about life and himself and his health and his father and his siblings. And another thing the other night that I really realized, you know how your feelings, one of our sons, the second one, Jeffrey, and see, this is what's interesting, how life can change. He was a problem when he was younger. And he said to me the other day, and this is with us having an adult talk, he said, you know, Dad, when you sent me to college, sent me to psychiatrists, sent me to schools to learn trades, I thought you were sending me away. He didn't say, I thought you were trying to educate me to do what I like. You were sending me away. And I never forget the psychiatrist I was told to send him to called me and said, Bernie, yes, it's a waste of time sending your son here. I said, what do you mean? He said, he comes in, he sits down in front of my desk where all the patients sit. I start talking to him, and he never says a word. He never answers me. He sits for hours staring right into my eyes. No one in 20 years has ever had the courage to do that. And he said, don't worry about him. He'll make it. And that's what Jeffrey said to me. He said, I always felt you were sending me away. Now, is that what sending somebody to college is, sending them away, or trying to get them an education? And he did go to a lot of different schools, from automotive to computerized, all kinds of things. So he fixes everything in my house now. He's amazing. Heating systems, because he built houses too, everything. But having him sit last night, he came over to say hello at the dinner table. We were finishing dinner. He came in, sat down. He was just sitting there smiling and talking. And it was such a lift to me to have him there. And I told him that today. I sent him an email. I said, it was such a gift to have you there last night. Just looking at you made me feel better. Whereas our other one, the oldest, is yelling at me in emails or verbally because he does a lot to help me. They both do. Those are the oldest, too, with my finances, you know, with paying taxes and bills and all kinds of things because I'm not allowed to write checks now. I'm not allowed to drive a car. I'm not allowed to be a doctor anymore in terms of a license. Doesn't mean I can't talk to people, but I'm not practicing medicine. They took my life away, you know, because of what happened to me with the heart attack. And that's the part, as I say, that hurts me. So when John is criticizing me, his name is Jonathan, I, you know, said to him that the effect it has on me to have you keep telling me what I'm doing wrong and everything else, and then he sees it as me telling him he's doing the wrong thing. And then I get more criticism from the lawyer in him about myself and what I'm doing, and I told him I would not criticize him anymore because I'm not going to trigger off his tirades of phone calls and emails to me telling me what I'm doing wrong. And I'm saying this so you all hear that. You want to help yourself and you help your kids, love them. Love them. Tell them you got a beautiful smile. I feel so good when I see you. And they were, you know, yeah, I did love them as kids. You know, I love them still now. But, I mean, when they were kids and we had a house full of pets and they played musical instruments and drew pictures and did things in the yard. It was so much fun, all the things I was learning from them. And we even ended up, got a house on Cape Cod, because it was crazy with five kids, you know. All right, we want to have a vacation. What do you want to do? With five kids, what do you want to do? Stay home. But what we did, I bought a house on Cape Cod, and we would go up there. So when the kids had a week off from school or summertime, you'd drive up there, and they'd all get out of the car, go in the house. My wife could stay with them. There were times I'd go back and, you know, to the hospital and practice, and she'd be there with them as they got older. She could come with me if she wanted to, and we're in Connecticut, so it was 3 or 4 hours to drive up and back, it was, you know, our summer home. We finally sold it, which was hard to let go of, but I had to do it. It was time, because I wasn't going to drive up and back anymore and things like that. And, you know, those are the memories you want to have. And I'm glad I'm telling that to you because, yeah, when our son calls up and is yelling at me, I'm reminding him of Cape Cod and our fishing and playing on the beach and, you know, in the sand and doing different things and all our crazy pets and everything else. So enjoy yourself. I don't know who said this quote. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. And that's what the smile wakes you up to. And it also wakes you up to stop telling people when they're doing something wrong. I mean, it's all right to help them. But, I mean, don't just be a critic. If they're doing something wrong, you can point out there are other ways of doing something. But it's not, oh, what's the matter with you? It's, you know, you have other options. There are different things you could do. And I'm getting into that now. Yeah, I have help in the house taking care of me. By that, I mean meals and taking care of the house and so forth. and the things I need. And she's good, you know. She can criticize me, and I don't get upset with her, because she's like a teacher. You know, she's worked with people and sees me, you know, as a person, sort of like one of her kids also. And it doesn't matter that I'm older than she is, but she has more wisdom about some things than I do because of her work. Caring for other people. And that's what I chose to do years ago. Care for other people. And I'd say to all of you, you want to give your life meaning, care for other people. And then you'll become immortal. And again, to be more explicit, like our oldest son, I'm going to move in with our one daughter. In a, I don't know, a month or two. We both have homes in the same town. And it's crazy to have two houses and all the money, you know, that's spent on my home, and I'm the only one living here. That's the one everybody grew up in. I've been here for 50 years. So we're going to sell it and move in with her. She's a sweetheart. Our one daughter. When she says something nice about me, it feels so good. And to have her take care of her father, you know, tell me that she likes me. She's not busy criticizing me. I mean, she might tell me something if she doesn't like how I'm behaving. But it's not, you know, what's the matter with you kind of approach. It's trying to take care of her father, not tell him what he's doing wrong, but tell him how to take care of himself. And so do that with everybody and yourself. what would be good for them? What would be good for you? And it's a very different approach that they can appreciate and understand and help them to grow up and learn how to take care of themselves. And I do a lot of reading about life and what other people are writing and reading to help them. This is just something sitting on my computer in front of me. It's called Open to Hope, Finding Hope After Loss. Open to Hope Writers. It's an organization, Open to Hope. You can probably find it on the internet. And, well, let me read you the first sentence. You'll get it. If you've written a grief book, do you still have copies waiting to be sold? Would you like help getting the word out about that book? In appreciation of all you give to Open to Hope, we'd like to help you sell those books to people who really need them. And that's something to think about, see? So they have conferences and do things. And, yeah, think about that. If you said, okay, my life is going to be about opening to hope, myself and the people around me. That's why I always remember, you know, the book Cancer Ward by Solzhenitsyn. One of the men, they're all in the hospital, and he comes into the ward and says, hey, there's this book I found in the hospital library. It says there are cases of self-induced healing. And he's reading this out of the textbook. Not recovery through treatment, but see, actual healing. And it was as though self-induced healing had fluttered out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly. And they all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch as it flew past. Only the gloomy Padiev, with a hopeless and obstinate expression on his face, croaked out, I suppose for that you need to have a clear conscience. And boy, does that sound like things I know I need to do and you all need to do and things I've been doing wrong, see? It's like, again, criticizing our son and then I don't have a clear conscience because I've told him things he's doing wrong and that if he wants to get well, what he needs to do. But then he sees it as blaming him and then he gets mad at me and it disrupts our relationship. Instead of my just saying, I love you, is anything I can do for you? Anything I can do to help you? So I'm trying to live the sermon, and we'll see what happens. You know, I've made it to 92, don't forget. I think that's pretty damn good with things I've run into and had happen to me. And here I am, and I'm functioning pretty damn well. Yeah, the frustrating things are, and you get to 92 and you're home, you need finances, you need people to help you, you're not a kid anymore, earning a living and doing everything for yourself. So think about those things as you grow. And don't get mad at life for getting older. It's not anybody's fault. It happens. We're here to live and learn. That's why the title, Open to Hope, you know, that's it's a foundation called Open to Hope Foundation. But again, just those three words, open to hope. I know people who didn't die when they opened to hope. I mean, they thought they were going to die, But instead of spending their time dying, they spent their time loving themselves. And I mean that literally. I got letters from them saying, I didn't want to die, you know, hating myself, angry at my body, so I lay down naked in front of the mirror. Those are quotes, you know, and started loving my body. And they recovered completely from their disease. And, you know, people who changed how they dressed, changed where they lived, changed how they ran their business, you know, stop worrying about making money and start enjoying yourself and helping people. And then what do you find out when you're not invited to the funeral and call up to say to the family, why didn't you call me about the funeral? The answer is, well, because he didn't die, or she didn't die. And then we go and visit. Now, we're all going to die someday. But if you want to be immortal, I forgot whose quote this is. Love is immortal and makes all things immortal. Well, hate dies every minute. It might have been something Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said that I heard. Because she was a good friend of mine and really helped me a lot to accept the mystical world. And because she was something. I mean, I think she was maybe the first person to say, Bernie, are you Jewish? After I spoke at a Christian funeral. I said, what are you asking me that for? Because I spoke at a Christian funeral? No, there's a rabbi standing next to you. Yeah, those are exact words. And I knew. I said, oh, that's George. He's my rabbi. And he takes care of me. And he's been with me. And I think that's a damn important reason why I'm still here at age 92. Because I've been in accidents and all kinds of things. And along comes George. And saves me physically, medically. He's been in many places many times. And stepped in the way and took me and kept me from being injured in such a way that I would have died or crippled, you know, all kinds of things. And that's when I really began to believe in him, because the first time I met him, you know, I didn't know what made it happen, meaning that doing meditation with a group of people at a workshop, and we were told we'll meet an inner guide. And we're to sit down and, you know, visualize someone in the, off in the distance coming towards us. And I thought, I didn't come here to learn all about all this crazy stuff. I came here to learn something, you know, to help my vision. But this fellow appeared. And at first when I saw him at a distance, I said, what's that on his head? And what's on his shoulders? And then I realized it were religious, you know, garments. And he came up to me and said, hello, my name is George. Hello, George. And we talked. And that's when he came into my life and began being seen by others and saved me. I've told this before, when I fell off the roof of my house and landed flat on my feet when a ladder broke. I mean, there's no way I could account for my not getting, you know, twisted in the ladder or tumble over or lose my balance to start walking down a wooden ladder and have the rung break off. And I just thought, uh-oh, here you go. And wham. Yeah, I did go and landed right on my feet. Flat feet. I lost my balance because it was totally unexpected that I would not end up on another part of my body, maybe crush my skull, break my back, something. And I just toppled over, had a few bumps, but nothing. I didn't go running to the emergency room or anything. The family was yelling at me, and I said, I'm fine. So, find your angels. They're there. Believe me. Be open to them. Talk to them. Let them in. Tell your family to let you know if they see anybody around you. We'll be back in a minute.
Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love, Magic, and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of five children, and grandparent of eight, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hi, everybody. All the technology of combining and coordinating and doing things together. But anyway, got to get my head together to get back to where I was. As I say, what's in front of me, open to hope. I mean, that I've learned. If you're not open to it, it can't happen. And what people don't realize is your body chemistry is related to your feelings. As I told you, what happened to me when my wife died? What happens to you when you win the lottery? You know? What happens to you when they tell you you're going to die of a certain disease? You see, when people have started living for the few months of time they had left. Then they noticed, how come I didn't die when I was supposed to? Because you were enjoying yourself and your body got a different message. But if you went home, sat down in the living room, totally depressed, stopped eating, stopped bathing, changing clothes, just sitting there, I'm going to die, you'll speed it up. Instead of dying in 3 weeks, you'll die in a week and a half. But if you said, oh, I got 3 weeks, so I'm going to go on a trip to enjoy myself, and at the end of 3 weeks, you're feeling so much better, you don't die. You go home and change your job, change where you live, change all kinds of things, and your body gets the message. No, we're all going to die, but you see, the whether we call it spirit, soul, or whatever, that doesn't die. That goes into new bodies when they're born. So that's why we're born often with talents. Like, I've been a painter, and I mean that literally, since I was a kid. I don't know whom, you know, I mean, I have suspicions over what major artist is in me, because I have some of his paintings and work in a book next to my bed that has always touched me. But anyway, even as a kid, I can remember, why are you sitting at the table drawing a picture on a piece of paper? Why don't you go do something? And our house is filled with portraits. I've talked about this before, myself, my wife, every one of our kids. And then I got into it with patients. Draw yourself, your disease, your treatment, your immune system. I mean, just art was always a part of it. And it's funny because I always remember my wife saying to me, why don't you introduce me to your patients when we meet them on the street? I said, because I don't know what their name is. I remembered everybody's appearance. So I'd say, hello, how are you? And they'd come over to me, too. And then my wife learned to step forward and say, hi, I'm Bernie's wife, Bobby. And they'd say their name, and then I'd hear it, and she'd hear it, and we'd be all set. Because if she didn't do that, I didn't know who they were. I mean, I could fake it. You know, they'd think I did know. But she's amazing with words and how we're all born with different talents. When I say that, I used to give talks and I'd make outlines and make notes. You know, I wouldn't write a talk and read it. It would come from my heart. But I'd put down points to make sure I covered them. And I realized also how much humor helps people in terms of improving blood count, survival, everything. And my wife had a wonderful sense of humor, and she started doing one-liners, literally getting up on the stage like some commercial comedian that you see on television, and she'd start with these one-liners and just keep going. And she had no notes with her. I mean, I don't know how, they were all in her heart and her head. She'd get up there and just start spieling, and about half an hour later she'd usually stop, and the audience would be all smiles and happy. And when the evening was over, a few hours later, they'd go up to her in a long line and say, thank you, it was wonderful, it feels so much better with, you know, with what you did. And maybe a quarter of the number came to me to say thank you, because I gave them information, you know, about how to take care of their illness. My wife gave them information about how to live. And that's why today I'm talking about this. I am telling myself I need to live the sermon. I need to start enjoying myself. And that includes everything. I don't have to do anything to be happy. I mean, you can say I'm doing something. Because I could say, oh, I'm just lying down, taking it easy. But it's what's going on in my head that I'm enjoying. And I know that makes a difference. And I enjoy a lot of game shows on television. You know, people are taking a chance on winning even $1 million. I'd like to be on that show, you know, playing games. It's fun, and I hope they all win with what they're doing. Because you never know. You see, that's the same statistic with your disease. You know, if somebody said, well, you got a 1 in 100 chance of getting well. All right. I've got a chance. They didn't say you have to die. Doctors kill people doing that. That's the part that bothers me about how doctors are trained. How we're not trained, okay? We're not trained to take care of people. We're trained to treat disease. If you become a writer, then the point is, teach me how to write. You know, how to make it meaningful. How to make it flow. Oh, I'm going to be a doctor. All right, here's all the diseases you'll be taking care of. What kind of doctor you want to be will help you. Yeah. And, you know, in a sense, it's more like being an engineer. I'm going to be an engineer. Okay, here's the materials you'll use that you need to know about. But what about the design, the beauty, the color? Those are the real engineers. What they're doing with the material they're given. And that's, see, there's the story of life. What are you doing with the material you've been given to live in and with? You've been given a body. What are you doing with it? How are you treating it? Are you abusing it? Are you loving it? And that's when my son pops back into my head. If he's not loving his life, if he's mad at his father, telling him what to do and making him feel guilty and, you know, things like that, that's not helping him. But if you think about, how do I want to live? What do I want to do? Where do I want to live? I met so many people, again, in my office, you know, helping them, because we had cancer groups, and where do you want to live in your final months? And they would pick places in the world where they went to. And again, I would get letters years later saying hi, and I realized they didn't die. They're off on some island somewhere, or South America, Alaska. I mean, it was what made them happy. So keep asking yourself, what would make me happy? And yeah, you could say, oh, if I won the lottery, I'd be happy. But why? What are you going to do with it? And you could say, well, I'd move, I'd buy a house, I'd get married, I'd open a business, I'd this, I'd that. Okay, get started on it. Let people know what you're trying to do. I didn't even know why I became a doctor. I mean it, that may sound crazy, but I didn't think that way in public school. Went to college, Colgate University, and that's where I got involved in pre-med courses and went on to medical school, but I don't remember what triggered me. You know, I think I just like people, and I try to figure out, well, how do I want to help people? You know, do I want to fix their cars? Do I want to paint portraits? Do I want to treat their illness? But you see, again, you hear those words, do I want to treat their illness? No, I don't want to treat their illness. I want to help them get well. That's the very way of saying something. And if you ask doctors, what do? Oh, you know, I treat disease. Well, why don't you help people get healthy? That's a very different statement. Yes, you're treating the disease through the person. Because just treating the disease doesn't get them well. They can still be mentally and physically ill while you treat an infection. Because your immune system is depressed when you is depressed too, when you're depressed. So Monday morning, you have more of these infections, colds, all kinds of things. Going to work, and how do I feel? So think about it. If you're going to work, how do you feel? If you're going to school, how do you feel? That's why I say, do what makes you happy. Draw yourself doing these things. Colleges should do that. You know, when they say to people, what do you want to specialize in? What do you want to major in? Draw yourself in your options, your choices. What job do you want? Draw yourself in each one and then see which looks best. And believe me, you'll get your answer very simply. Look at them and say, what colors did I use? I always say this on the show, that when I started doing these things at the hospital, oh boy, everybody thought, what a nutty guy. What's he doing with a box of crayons and patients? I did a lot of pediatric surgery, so the kids didn't ask me, why are you giving me crayons? I was keeping them busy doing drawings, and I could evaluate from their drawings what was the best treatment, how they were going to do, show things to their parents that their children drew, or the anesthesiologist, so they knew what drugs to not give them, things that kids were allergic to or would have a reaction to, and there was no history of it, but there was something intuitive in the child's drawings. And when people were going to die, the color purple was a big bit of information, the spiritual color. And I could prepare family and patients for that event because they let me know. And were there times I resisted and helped them live? You're damn right. I've told this, I'm sure, on this show, where I've seen purple clouds leaving people's bodies or being all over their beds in the hospital where they were, patients. And I've talked to them about it. And when they decided to refuse, or I yelled, come on back. Literally, I've done that with a number of patients. Come on back. It's not your time yet. That was my saying. And people, the cloud went back into the person, and they came back and woke up, came back to life. And I always hear that one anesthesiologist, because I've said this before too. I saw a purple cloud come out of this young man's body. I yelled, Jimmy, it's not your time yet. Come on back. And the cloud came back. And the anesthesiologist said, I love working with you. He said, his heart has stopped. I was going to tell you and call the morgue. I couldn't get it started. And now it's beating. And, you know, I didn't feel that I was crazy or anything special. I just did what felt right. So follow your heart. That's a good thing to tell you. Don't just think about everything. Feel your way along. So your whole body enjoys what you're doing and can enjoy being with you. And when we get back in a minute, we'll talk about what happens to you in your body when you begin to enjoy what you're experiencing and why you can recover from things then that you couldn't recover from when you're totally depressed. Okay, talk to you again in a minute.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, MD. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody. I just, while we took a break, something came on that talks about rhythm mantras. This is on my computer in front of me. Drumming for spiritual transformation and mindfulness, where you can sign up, rhythm mantras. It's just, you know, fascinating. Awakening through drums. What goes on? You know, I've been talking my craziness. And a person name is Christine Stevens of Drum Circles, UB Drum Circles. Awakening through drums. A podcast dedicated to the liberation from suffering and living a luminous, soul-aligned life. Now, again, if somebody came into you and said, Well, I bought you a drum, and I want you to come with me to my seniors' drum group. I have one for you and one for me. You're going to say, that's nuts. What difference is it going to make beating on a drum? But this rhythm, it, and that's the word they have, rhythm mantras. You know, the subtopic below the pictures, if you turn on, like, you know, a little film. Find out more at sacreddrumlanguage.com. Drumming for Spiritual Transformation and Mindfulness, a free workshop to sign up. And let me just read this so you understand. See, I was called the controversial Dr. Siegel. Why? Because I talked about all these crazy things. It doesn't make any sense. It's not scientific. Now, he talks about drumming for spiritual transformation and mindfulness. During this event, I'll be sharing two rhythm patterns on two different drums, and the grounding heartbeat on buffalo drum. So there are actually three different kinds of drums. I'll be sharing the brain science that reveals why drumming is an effective method to shift our consciousness. Wow. Name is John Scalise, founder of Get Rhythm. And it shows him in the computer that I have leading his senior drum group. And think about that. Are you going to all say, oh, that's crazy? I mean, listen to these words as the advertiser. We woke up like this. That's Christine Stevens, UB Drum Circles, Up Drum Circles. A podcast dedicated to the liberation from suffering and living a luminous, soul-aligned life. Awakening through drums. And then they have an interview with her. And the reason I say this is, I went through this decades ago, talking about different things, playing music in the operating room, talking to patients while they were anesthetized, and they heard me. And, you know, oh, that's crazy. That doesn't make sense. How can they do that? Blah, 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 blah. But eventually, they saw the benefits and then began to accept what I was saying. And I, as I said, always did a lot of pediatric surgery, and that made it a lot easier. I didn't have to convince, you know, five-year-olds or eight-year-olds that I was a legitimate doctor and they could believe me. I talked to them, and they believed me, what I was saying. If I'd said, you know, do a certain thing that it'll help you, or you won't feel a needle, I'm going to rub you, you know, with this magic liquid that makes your skin numb. And I used to get such a kick out of it when you'd rub a skin with an alcohol sponge and lie to them by saying, oh, this is a new thing that they just made. It makes your skin numb so you don't feel needles. It cleans your skin and you don't feel the needle. And the kids would look up at me. I always hear that voice. Why don't the other doctors use that? Because they didn't feel anything. And so other doctors and nurses began to lie to kids too, because they knew it was good for them and it helped them. And if it hurt, in other words, if they said to me, what I'd usually hear, it improved everybody, but some would say, I felt it. I'd say, oh, I'm sorry. That was a bad, you know, sponge. They didn't have enough of the medication on it. And I'd throw it in the wastebasket. And the kids wouldn't be mad at me. They'd realize the equipment you know, didn't work. So the next time I tried it, it would be okay. And I'd say, don't be afraid. Again, my children, five, at home, used to get mad at me. Dad, stop saying you're lying to children. But it was an easier way to get the point across, rather than saying, I'm hypnotizing all the children. But they were hypnotized by my words. So don't be afraid to do that. I know enhanced, so I've said this before. I was born to a mother who was told not to have a child because she was so severely ill with thyroid, hyperactive thyroid. I mean, she always said looked like a, you know, from photographs, looked like a concentration camp patient. She was bulging eyes, you know, her body wasted away. And her mother said to her, I want a grandchild. And my crazy mother, who knew she could die if she added pregnancy to her stress, went and became pregnant and really barely survived. They told her, you'll never make it through a cesarean section. You're too weak to pass the child. She was in labor for weeks and weeks, screaming, and nothing happened. And so they finally reached in with forceps and pulled out the battered Bernie Siegel. As my mother said, they didn't pull out a child, they pulled out a purple melon. Boy, I mean, I didn't hear this till I was grown and had medical knowledge. And, you know, how and why did that happen? Because I began to find things in the house that didn't make sense to me, you know, medical information, reports, things, and I started asking questions, and that's when my mother pulled things out of a dresser that had been, you know, buried there for decades and told me what had happened to me, and that's when I started getting interested in all of this and what was happening. And also why there are certain deformities of my body. I mean, not terrible, but, you know, leg, ribs, things like that, where things were pushed out of position while they were trying to pull me out and deliver me. So I've told you all this, too. Your old grandma saved me. Touch people. Hug them. Love them. It changes people. Changes their body chemistry. And my grandmother took me, and to quote my mother, poured oil all over you and massaged you every 3 or 4 hours to push things back where it belonged. And if she hadn't done that, I know damn well I would have died from you know, medical knowledge. Because you don't touch. And don't touch a newborn. I don't care if it's a little chicken popping out of an egg or a child popping out of a uterus. Don't touch it. Nothing comes to life. You know, the hormones and other things that respond to the touch don't. They have nothing to respond to. And so the child wastes away and dies. You know, it's like dying in a concentration camp where nobody's feeding you, nobody's doing anything to you, and what can happen to you? Well, so I hope everybody has a grandmother who will pour oil all over you, massage you, and love you till we all get to the time for us to pass on and be recycled.